You're listening to Cards to the Moon, a podcast about trading cards from both a collector and investor perspective. We hope you'll stick around for the ride as we take a deep dive into the state of the hobby, share some hot takes, hopefully some useful advice and fun stories along the way. Hey guys, welcome back to Cards to the Moon. This is episode 184, and we're just starting season 4 of the podcast. My name is Clark from Five Card Guys on Instagram and fivecardguys.com. We got the original crew back with Hyung, who is Integrity Sports Cards on Instagram, and John, who is Trade You at Recess. All right, before we start with our off-the-top segment, Hyung, since you weren't here last week for our first episode of season 4, I just wanted to ask you if you had any hobby goals for 2024, since you didn't get a chance to talk about it.
Oh man, I think for me, I'm following kind of like what I guess believe in long term, like good investments, not really chasing the flip, and also like I really like one touches. I realize like raw cards. So I think starting like more of a raw card collection.
Whoa.
Yeah, I know.
I like that.
Yeah, the collector in me.
Okay. So are you talking more like a lot of PC cards?
Or still investing? Yeah, no, probably more PC for me. Yeah. It's like that's how I enjoy the hobby more, instead of trying to always chase like what card should be, you know, that I could make money off of more so. Because it's like, I feel like sometimes you buy like a card that you love, but then the flip opportunity comes so quick and then you're just like, okay, should I get rid of it? But you bought it because you loved it, but then, you know, you liquidate it so quick, right? So I want to enjoy the hobby more as a collector. So that's kind of one of my goals. And then from an investment standpoint, you know, focus on maybe potentially vintage and kind of like more of a long-term strategy with what I feel are iconic cards or super rare cards, and kind of build that portfolio.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Cool. Yeah. I think we mentioned in the past episode too, that, you know, last year we talked about 2023 being grail hunting season. And I think there's still opportunities in 2024, 100%, right?
Absolutely.
So a bit of a continuation from the previous year. We also talked just off air right now, and the big announcement I personally made last episode was that I'm planning to go to the National for the first time this year. Hyung, I know said you're coming.
We're committing.
Yeah, we're committing to each other.
Verbally committed. And we can't back out now.
I'm in. So, and then, you know, I think even John, because in the last episode, he has his fishing trip, but now he's thinking about it too. So I like where we're going. Yeah. This is,
because, you know, thinking about it, like, you know, only 5 hours away, maybe, you know, if we're going to drive, even if it's like just an overnighter, I think I can get it done.
Okay. Yeah. And we'll definitely be producing a bunch of content, right?
That's for sure. Absolutely. You know,
it'll be fun to watch and to experience in person. So there you go. Two back-to-back big announcements to start off season 4 of Cards to the Moon. Okay, let's move on to the off-the-top segment that I originally planned. And I wanted to bring this up because it's kind of related to my alternate reality cards idea that I pitched last week as well. And so hear me out. There's a new Disney Topps Chrome set that just came out, and one of the biggest chase cards in that set is the one-of-one quad auto, right, featuring Mickey Mouse, Donald Duck, Goofy, and Pluto. Okay, so the question is, are we just setting aside the reality that it was some person who signed this card pretending to be these fictional characters and making this card potentially worth tens of thousands of dollars? This is what I'm hearing from Twitter or from X, you know, like that this card is like, it could go for 40-50K, right? But I mean, do you know what I mean? Like, am I just being a Disney hater, or I don't know. What do you guys think of this card?
I think that's valid. I think what you just said is valid, that I don't think it's worth whatever someone's willing to pay. But, you know, we know on releases and hype and inflated values based on, you know, the hot stuff in the market. But I will say this. I'm a big fan. I'm a big fan of Topps Chrome Disney. Okay. I think it gave me a glimpse of exactly what they were talking about, what Fanatics was talking about, how they're going to reach the supposed 10x level. And I know a lot of haters are going to, you know, be like, yeah, right, the hobby's not going to... In the context of sports, yes, like we're not going to grow and the market's going to correct, but we're talking a whole different category of fans that can enjoy the essence of ripping, collecting, trading, right? Like for me, I was thinking about even with your kids, it's like if they're Disney fans, this is a great product to, you know, like, or great hobby to introduce them to, right? And with Fanatics doing what they're doing with partnerships like this, it's like you could now have more utility involved, especially with Disney stuff. So there's a lot of, I think, upside towards this whole release. Is it cheesy sometimes when you see like the Pluto autos? It's like who's signing it? Like, yeah, like I think we're gonna have to assign real value to, you know, things that like we need to think about that. Like, why is there value? Is it because the autograph of who plays those characters, the voices? Like, I don't know how they come up with who signs it, but but yeah, overall, I don't mind the product. I think it's a cool rip, and it's a totally different clientele. Like, I'm telling you, if you're a baseball enthusiast, hobbyist, and you only care about baseball, you're not gonna like it unless you're open-minded and you enjoy Disney, right? So it's not for us.
Right.
So we can't expect the parallels of baseball that we love and expect it on something totally different where Fanatics is going. And that's why I seen that glimpse and I'm like, I actually like, this is exactly what I was talking about, what Fanatics was doing, right? So.
Yeah, fair point, fair point. What do you think, John?
I'm kind of torn on this because similar to what Hyung's saying, you can't really hate on it because it's just the chase that they created. Is it like all the way gimmicky? I would say yes, it's completely gimmicky. But like as you guys were talking, I was thinking, man, I think it, you know, yes, it doesn't, this is a product that doesn't necessarily speak to sports cards fans, but it could, right? Like if they made it, I don't know, like the big chase was a Walt Disney cut auto, or, you know, like the main illustrators or actors that play big characters in Pixar movies and stuff signed like the Super Fractors one of one or something. I think the execution could have been different. But at the same time, when I think about that, it would just attract a bunch of grown men like this to a Disney product when maybe this product was meant for a 12-year-old kid getting a Pluto autograph, and they think that's the coolest thing in the world, right? So, you know, maybe they designed this purely for kids, purely for fun. I don't know the real execution. So on the one hand, I kind of goof on it. I do think it's completely silly that we have no idea. Like, why is this even like a crate? Like, why would this be worth 40,000? Like somebody was saying like 40,000. Yeah. The record Disney card previously was 40,000 and people are saying this could break that. Right. I think that's complete nonsense, but I think I can't really hate on it, but if you're an older person or older, you know, like, or you're like investor and you're thinking about what you think of this in terms of an investment, I truly think the Lorcana, like the TCG Disney has more legs long-term in terms of like, if you wanted to invest in cards, this one, I think is just purely fun. You're like a Disney fan, you know, Clark and I, you and like our kids, we can rip open boxes. Hopefully there's no crazy resale and hype. And, you know, I can go out and buy like a hobby box for $75 or something and rip it with my kids and have a fun time. I think that's what it's meant for, but yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So
that's also fair. Mm-hmm. Well, let me put this scenario to you, John, since you have kids and I have kids as well. Just say you're ripping with your daughters and it's all fun. and then you hit that quad auto. You're like, and then your daughter's like, oh, I love this card. I'm never going to sell it. What are you doing? And you're like, sure, we can just, you know, hold. You know that someone might pay 50K for it, though. What are you doing, John? Yeah,
that would be tough. But I think my daughter's smart enough. Like, she can be convinced. Like, I could say, you know, five Nintendo Switch games, and we could also rip another 10 boxes instead of, you know, instead of the card. Exactly. And she'll be like, yeah, okay, let's do that instead. There are ways around it. You know,
that's it. Yeah. Gotcha. I'm writing notes down just in case I do get a big hit from the Disney Topps Chrome set and my kid wants to keep it. All right. I'm with you guys too. Like, I love the collectability of the set. Like, I actually prefer, or would prefer, as a collector, the non-auto, like, super fractor of a major Disney 100%, character. Because, right? You know, that's like, that's cool. And, you know, like, for me, I just can't get beyond that. You know, I think someone on Twitter said, like, so I don't get it. Are we assigning a lot of value because some intern signed these cards, Mickey Mouse and Donald Duck and, you know, all the other characters, right? So,
yeah.
And then there was a funny video clip. I don't know if you saw it, but some guy took the Disney, I don't know if it was Topps Chrome, but it was like Disney Lorcana or whatnot card to Disney. And then he gave it to the mascot, the Mickey Mouse mascot, to sign. So the mascot just was signing Mickey Mouse with like his big gloves, like mouse gloves. So the autographs were like super messy. But then he's like, yes, I got four copies of this Mickey Mouse autograph cards. Oh man, it's just getting kind of silly with...
Would PSA authenticate why I'm tying that? In-
That's a good question.
Which Mickey signed it?
Yeah. Hey, I have video proof.
This is similar to that, like, Topps Holiday product with, like, Santa and Mrs. Claus. Remember it was, like, signed?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. That's true. Yeah, very similar. Anyway, I thought it was a fun thing to talk about off the top. And, yeah, still cool for the kids. And I have no idea, actually, how much hobby boxes are, but I'm guessing it's about $100 or so. All right, let's move on to hobby headlines. So, speaking of Twitter, speaking of X, I saw another one by gemrate.com where they recently posted a 2023.
This episode is brought to you by Visit Williamsburg. In Williamsburg, Virginia, there's never too much of a good thing. Whether you're a foodie, a golfer, a history buff, a shopaholic, an outdoor enthusiast, or a thrill seeker, you'll find what you came for here and more. So ask yourself, what is it you want? Discover Williamsburg and plan your trip at visitwilliamsburg.com.
Three grading year in review post. And I thought some of the data they presented was pretty interesting. So for this segment, maybe we can go through some of the key findings and then we can talk about our initial thoughts and whether we expect some of these grading trends to continue in 2024. Okay, so I'll start with their first point, which was that there are more than 17 million items graded across the four major graders, which are PSA, BGS, Beckett, CGC, and SGC. So 17 million items were graded across those four major graders, and that's up 19% compared to 2022. Any initial thoughts on that number, the increase, the one-fifth increase in items being graded?
I think a lot of newcomers to the hobby. I think it's a process where every newcomer comes in as well, and because I see a lot of questions, first time grader, what should I do, or what should I kind of look for, yeah, or whatever that is. So I think there's an influx of people coming into the hobby mixed with people still grading. You mix in specials, SGC release specials. They got a lot of slabbed. So a bunch of, I would guess a combination of those things.
Makes sense.
Yeah. And most of the companies scaled up, right? So they are able to handle volume and handle it pretty quick.
Turnaround times are better, yeah.
Totally. And I mean, I remember a lot of IG or sports card influencers were talking about the effect of grading, whether some people believe that this grading era is ruining sports cards, or some people are just saying like this is like the grading era. But I mean, it makes sense. I think people, even if it wasn't for the point of flipping, a lot of people, if they get PC cards, kind of like what Hyung was saying about one touches, but people actually prefer slabbing them, like sending it to CGC or sending it to PSA, even if it came back a PSA 7, like they prefer, I personally do. A lot of my like PC cards, I actually like it slabbed, knowing I can, you know, like kind of like wiggle it and, you know, my card's not going to fly out of a top holder and something like that. So I think that probably has a lot to do with the increase.
Yep. And this next data point kind of provides more clarity in what cards are being submitted for grading. So out of the 17 million, roughly 9 million were sports cards, right? And the other 8 million were TCG or non-sports cards. So if you look at the 9 million number, that's actually a decrease of 6% year over year in terms of the number of sports cards being graded from 2022 to 2023. So the major increase is on the TCG side of things, where that 8 million figure is a 71% increase year over year, which is surprising in some ways, but in other ways, even in like, you know, the people that we know, i.e. Roy, he's the only one submitting these days, and it's all like TCG Pokemon cards. Right. Whereas we're like, you know, we're not submitting that much, or we didn't submit that much this past year for grading. So those numbers kind of make sense to me. But are you surprised at how much more TCG collectors are submitting to the grading companies?
I think it goes back to what we were talking about. Like, I don't think we realize how big the hobby is outside of sports cards, like in general, how quickly a market can just be massive, you know, especially with the history. So seeing stuff with Disney, whether it would stick or not, that has huge potential, because if there are valuable assets in vintage Disney stuff, right? Mm-hmm. Why can't stuff like this also, you know, obtain a marketplace, right? And then you got stuff like Marvel. I was a huge Marvel person, right? There's other industries that potentially can grow. So with saying all this, I think that just gives you an idea of the growth of something that's non-sports related, right? And that's what we were talking about. We talked about it 2 years ago. Would there ever be life outside of kind of like the sports cards, right? Fast forward 2 years later, it's like, here we are with the boom of, you know, Pokemon and stuff like that. It's very realistic.
Yeah.
Right.
For sure. Well, another thing I was thinking though, like one of the major reasons that we might have seen a decrease in sports cards, you know, just a minus 6% decrease, but still like the value isn't there. You know, like before when you grade it, you're like, oh, this is a 3X for sure. But now, you know, you grade it, especially if it comes a PSA 9, you're losing money for sure. A PSA 10, it depends on what the card is. You might maybe get a small profit depending on the, you know, especially if we're talking modern cards. Whereas, you know, you look at Pokemon, you look at other TCG, if it gets a PSA 10, the value is still there. Like you can make a good profit, 3, 4X. So does that, you know, if you project what happened with sports cards, is that something that we should worry about if you're a TCG collector saying, hey, this is a good opportunity now, but just like sports cards, you know, with this mass grading, you know, how long will that kind of last in terms of these 3, 4X profit?
Right.
Do you know what I'm saying?
I think that's more than fair. I think that's what you're going to see. I think all marketplaces follow the same trend. Right. Because it's at the end of the day, it's supply demand. Right. So it's going to eventually all correct. And who knows when that is. And that was the whole sports card question, was when was it going to correct into regular ways? So any marketplace, whether you're, you know, trading stocks or whatever, it follows the same kind of pattern. So I would imagine that it's same here in this situation.
Mm-hmm. Right. Yeah. It's really hard to pinpoint. I think there has to be some correlation of ROI, right? Like when we look at our friend Roy and we see his PSA reveals, like he's a lot of, you know, half of the cards he's buying singles, half he's like ripping from packs. But what I've watched Roy, like it's not terribly difficult to get a hit card in a booster box. that costs you $75 or whatever it costs you to open, where you can get a card that's worth $25, $35, $40. And if it hits a PSA 10, which a lot of these products have pretty good gem rates, it is like a $300 card, right? So that opportunity is there. Whereas in sports cards, like, I mean, the three of us know at this point, like base cards aren't going to be worth the cost of grading. Yeah. You know, you'd have to get a pretty significant hit to be worthy to send for like a $25, $35, $45 grading fee, right? So I think there's some correlation between ROI of the ability to get some ROI in those Pokemon or like any TCG or non-sports card boxes. And then the other point, I'm kind of about to go on a tangent here, but I was watching like Neo Cards and Comics and some other sports cards YouTubers, and they're talking about how like breakers, like I was really thinking about this before like coming on the show, like breakers and how they're sort of affecting the sports card landscape, specifically in prices of boxes. So I'm actually kind of getting annoyed myself, like personally, because the ROI is not there on a box, but why does it still cost 200, 300, 400, 500 bucks? And it's because most of that is, you know, getting gobbled up by breakers, and they're still able to score and make money, right? So they're going to continue buying it at $200, $300, $400 because they're going to profit $1,500 or whatever they profit off of it. And they're going to pretty much buy up all the cases, which kind of then in turn means the regular Joes, like the three of us, can maybe afford to buy one box, maybe. And then we're not buying, right? So the conspiracy theorists, now if you go even deeper, I'm like, I wonder if Fanatics, like, I wonder if this is by design. Like, I wonder if they're funneling everything through breakers and upholding the cost of boxes so that, you know, organically, quote unquote, you know, like local card shops start to go out of business because the three of us aren't going to buy hobby boxes that cost Prism box that cost $900, but we might pay $100 to go into a break, right? So it just like, it's this weird... I was going down this rabbit hole of thinking like conspiracy.
No, I think it makes sense. Absolutely. I think 100% what you're saying, the Fanatics wants breakers, you know,
they're they do. Well, yeah, clearly they do. The cost. But
yeah, yeah, absolutely. It's a benefit for them. And like they said, they were eventually going to say retailers were not going to be kind of like the go-to anymore. Right. And that was inevitable. We've been talking about that for the last 2 years. Will hobby card shops like how they used to be exist?
Yeah.
Right. And you're slowly seeing the people that don't adapt to today. So if you're not a hobby shop doing breaks, for instance, right, you know, exactly. just from the marketing standpoint, you should be right. So you got to pivot. Yeah. You got to pivot your strategies. But what you said, John, makes total sense. 100%.
Yeah. And ultimately, like Fanatics can, at that point, control pricing, right? Regardless of the market. Like if the market, if you bring out Topps Chrome and it's a complete failure because there's no good hits and it's a $300 box, the market is going to speak for itself. It's going to go on sale and no one's going to buy it at $200, and it's going to go on sale again. It's going to go to $100. But if it goes completely through breakers and breakers get 90, 95% of the stock and they're pricing at a certain price, then
I would imagine they leave a bunch for online because probably their margins are way bigger. So I would assume that online sales would be very important to their future strategy because they have boxes that sell out, like Topps Chrome Sapphire. Yep. Like it would sell out because they're so limited, right? So like stuff like that, I think I don't think they completely rely on breakers to bring that money in, because I think there's other ways that they make better money. But definitely it's an important strategy. But I think their online sales would be kind of like their go-to stream of kind of where to buy product now. It makes no sense for you to go to your local hobby shop because order everything online now, right?
Yeah.
But the breaking component allows Fanatics to what I was saying is like control of pricing, right? So if they want to sell it at $300, they're pretty much guaranteed to sell it at $300 because 90% of that stock is going to go to breakers, right? So, anyways, I'm going down a rabbit hole.
I guess the big assumption is that how much of it is really allocated to the breakers? Is it really 90% or less or more? That's
that's not a factual number. I'm just spitting out for the sake of illustrating a dramatic point.
Yes. But I mean, like, some of your points, John, and what you're saying, Hyung-Too, they could all be true. Like, I think everything's in flux. Like, it's evolving. The business model of what the hobby is going to be and look like is evolving, right? Yeah. So yeah. Well, I mean, you know, we could see in, like, by this time next year, things could dramatically change as well. And it's really whatever makes the most money for Fanatics is going to win out at the end of the day. So... all right, I got a few more points here. Here's a breakdown of the cards submitted in 2023 to the four major graders. Okay, so PS out of the roughly 17 million items graded last year, PSA graded 13.5 million cards. Okay, so that's up 21% year over year for PSA. CGC graded 1.75 million cards, coming in second. Surprisingly for me, and that's up 8% year over year for them. Third, SGC graded 1.28 million cards, which is up 29% year over year. So the biggest year over year increase relatively goes to SGC. And good old Beckett graded 772,000 cards, which is just up 3% year over year. And just to kind of give you an overall market share, in 2023, PSA still is king, of course, at 78% of the market share just in 2023. Second place is CGC now at 10%. Third is SGC at 7%. Wow. And Beckett is 4%. And that's just in 2023. So surprised at any of those numbers?
Yeah, for sure. I would assume the CSG is grading a lot of non-sports cards.
Right.
Would that be kind of like the influx of bump? And then SGC doing some damage as well. And I think the promos that they've been doing with Bowman Chrome and Bowman First, Topps Chrome releases, it's really working in terms of the penetration of the marketplace. And now we just need, because more slabs are being slabbed, more iconic cards, like, or not iconic cards, but potential iconic cards where they're being slabbed by SGC instead of PSA and BGS, because that's what it used to be, PSA or BGS, right? So it's interesting to see SGC sneak in there, but it was inevitable because we talked when they were starting, they're doing things right, and they made a huge, huge impact within, you know, 1-2 years, the last 2 years, I'd say.
Sure. Yeah. True.
Mm-hmm. I think normally I would have been a lot more surprised at some of these figures, but because of the previous context, you said how 9 million were sports cards and 8 million were TCG. It makes a lot of sense. Then I realized look at CGC at 10%, you're like, okay, that makes sense, you know? Even PSA going up, like, look at Roy, like, he's, all of his TCG cards are going to PSA, right? So I'd imagine because I remember when Roy first started collecting, you know, I don't know if PSA was, and we need Roy back on to kind of verify this, but back on the number of years, I don't know if PSA was like the king. Like, obviously they were still, you know, value wise might have been big, but I think, he was mentioning how Pokemon collectors were more into the PC. Like, they, if they like the CGC slab, like, they're going to put their cards in that. It wasn't really about like how much money or how much ROI you're going to get. It wasn't that necessarily from like a investor perspective. So, the fact that so much of it has now moved, a lot of TCG has moved over to PSA, like, people are now seeing flipping opportunities and whatnot. So,
sure.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, that's good to bring it back to the context of 17 million items graded with nearly half of them being TCG cards. So yeah, that's a good reminder. And you know, in our chat group, Roy was saying something like CGC made that grading change, and then a lot of collectors weren't too pleased with it. Mm. You know, it sounded very similar to what Beckett was trying to do until they backed down. I wonder if that's going to be a factor in 2024, whether, you know, people are who collect TCG are just upset enough with CGC to just go over to PSA now at this point. And then, you know, we might see CGC numbers decrease. I don't know. That's just a kind of a hypothesis, right, of what might happen in 2024. But obviously this past year, they saw a really good bump in numbers. Okay. A couple more things. Gem rate for all cards graded in 2023. Okay. So gem rates are whatever the grading company deems is a gem. So for Beckett is 9.5 or higher, right? PSA is obviously a 10. And I believe SGC, what is that?
It's a 10.
9.5 is also, oh, it's just a 10 insert gem?
Yeah.
Okay. And CGC, I believe, is a 10 as well now. Okay. So the gem rate for all cards graded in 2023, PSA, 43%, Beckett, 45%, SGC, 26%, and CGC, 37%. So out of those numbers, the hardest to get a gem rate is SGC, according to the
which is
numbers,
insane. Which is, I feel like every card I sent to SGC, I got a 10.
10.
Like I was just like, is this company a joke or? But then, yeah, I mean, yeah, that shocks me. That's a pretty low gem rate, and that might be good data to, you know, sneak a purchase that is in a SGC slab. I think the value is going to be there. For sure.
Yeah. Yeah. I was surprised.
Yeah.
As well.
Those, I mean, if you think about a gem rate 40, you know, all of them nearly being 40%, except SGC, that's high. I think that just shows how good the average Joe has become at eyeballing whether you have a gem card or not, right? And whether you're about to waste money or not. I think everyone knows this, you know, how to clean it and how to look That's at true. Corners and edges and thoroughly look at the card before you send it in. And I'd imagine because of that fact, perhaps some of that, you know, maybe this is just completely my opinion, but the fact that SEC is at 26%, maybe that has to do with the fact of their Bowman Tops promotions at $9 or whatever it was at. I'm sure there are a lot of people who were sending in without even looking. You know, like, oh, it looks pretty good. Right. Send it in because it's $9, right? And then they're hitting nines and they're hitting 9.5s and they're not getting those.
Oh,
they're not spending the extra 5 minutes per card. Maybe that has, you know, some hit on that percentage, right? So just something I thought of for right now.
No, excellent point. And, you know, while you're talking, I wonder how many vintage cards go to SGC because vintage, you know, that's still SGC.
Yeah. Oh, that's a good point, you know, too.
Right. So, those vintage cards won't gem for sure, right? Or most of them won't. So that might play a factor. But, you know, at the same time, I'm sure a lot still send to PSA, you know, in terms of vintage cards too. So I wonder what the ratio is there. All right, last point. The top growing sports in 2023 in terms of cards being submitted, baseball still number one at plus 20%. And this is what's a little surprising to me. Hockey, plus 16%.
Wow,
that's a good sign. That's a really good sign. Yeah. I would say you gotta change the baseball to Ohtani was 20% and then hockey was 16%.
Ohtani was 19% and the rest of baseball cards was 1%. Yes, fair point. All right. Well, you know, I always say this. I'm always a Beckett supporter. I feel like I'm hoping Beckett has a better year in 2024 because, you know, I believe in you guys. But man, looks like PSA, you know, still has all the momentum right now. And it'll be interesting to see how it plays out for the rest of the year, especially with graders not named PSA. Okay, let's go on to our next segment called Quiz Show. This is America's and Canada's favorite hobby game show, right? So with our favorite contestants back, Young and John, I'm just going to ask you guys a few hobby-related questions. And all you need to do is answer them the best you can, all right?
Sounds good.
So since we were talking about grading in the previous segment, here's one more question about grading according to data from GemRate. All right, so according to GemRate.com, cards from which set era saw the most graded in 2023? And the way GemRate categorized these set eras, it was by decade, okay? Starting with 1950s and earlier, so that's grouped into one. Then it goes to 1960s, 1970s, all the way up to where we are now, the 2020s. So which decade do you think saw the most graded in 2023?
I would have to say 2020.
Yeah.
I would have to say, but am I missing something here?
Like, yeah. I think the TCG portion would be definitely 2020 as new boxes are coming out. People are grading them. And then the whole SGC promotion, mm-hmm. like we just said, Tops and Bowman, that must have had a pretty decent flurry of action for modern cards. So
yeah, it has to be 2020.
Yeah, it has to be 2020.
The answer is...
We're so wrong.
The 2020s. Okay. No, you got it. that was easier than I expected. I don't know. I don't know why I found that surprising. No, well, now that you guys reminded me of the context of all the 17 million that was submitted in 2023, right. Yes, it makes total sense. But the fact that for me, maybe the surprising part was just that modern cards are still being submitted like crazy in terms of you know what gets submitted to the grading companies. Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. Okay. Next question. Number two. So the last triple autograph card of Kobe Bryant, Michael Jordan, and LeBron James to sell at a public auction sold for almost $100,000. Okay. How many Kobe, LeBron, MJ triple autos are currently in existence, do you think?
Wow.
You could give me a range.
Holy cow.
Triple auto. This is not an area it wasn't that I would be good at.
I think this is for on card autos. So I'm sure there's more
autos.
Sticker autos, yes.
Sticker.
Yeah.
So we're talking about on card and sticker?
Sorry?
We're talking
about just on card.
Just on card.
Just on card. Yes.
Oh wow.
Yeah.
I'm gonna say 100 to 200. Is that too wide of a range? Let's say 150.
Yeah. 100 to 150?
Sure, okay. Sure.
On card autos?
Yes.
Total or total, like total existence? Or are we talking about like total variations of cards? Or total existence?
Total in existence. Okay. Just those three players. Triple on card autos, yeah.
In existence. I would say,
watch it be like 1,000.
It'd be numbered to like 23. Like I feel like
23.
No. It would be like a set that would be numbered to 23 or something like that. Right. So it'd be like maybe, I don't know. This is not my forte, but I would say 50 to 100.
Okay, you guys are close. And I want to double check these because now I'm second guessing myself with the on card autos. But what I saw was that the actual number is 107.
107.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So you guys were right in between your guesses. Yeah. All right. So this is this next one's kind of related. Shine 150, you know, the super high-end collector. Mm-hmm. I don't know if you saw recently. He just bought a dual Logo Man autograph card of LeBron and MJ for more than $1 million. How many of the dual Logo Man of LeBron and MJ auto cards are known to be in existence?
Oh.
Logo Man.
Is
dual Logo Man, dual auto.
Is the one that he bought one of one?
I believe so, yes.
I remember
yes, that was a one of one.
I don't know if it's the LeBron and Jordan, but I do know of older Logo Man exquisites or upper decks that are like numbered out of five and stuff like that.
But there were a Logo Man? Or they were just a patch auto.
Logo Man. Yeah, logo. It may not have the autograph though. I'm gonna say 7.
Okay, wow.
This is tough. If Shine's paying $1 million for that, that has to be super low. Like it has to be.
Well, he was explaining the story where he saw it ripped like in a video in 2009 or whatever. And it literally has not been seen since. And he was able to, through a connection, get into the contact with the person who has it. And then obviously made him an offer he can't refuse, right?
Yeah.
So you say 3?
3. Yeah. I'll say 3.
Yeah, it's a good guess. There was 3 until that one surfaced. So now it's 4.
Oh wow.
Yeah. So dual Logo Man, dual auto of LeBron and MJ. So yeah, that makes sense. $1 million
Yep. For... Yeah, like if there's too many out there, Shine's getting taken.
Well, but he does seem to have a lot of money to throw around. So
yeah, I don't know. Might. Yeah, he would probably corner it.
Okay, here we go. Most expensive. What is the most expensive Montreal Expos card of all time?
Montreal. Oh, I know.
Oh my.
Tom God. Brady. Tom Brady, 100%.
It's 100% Tom Brady.
Oh, man. Oh. Okay, you ready for the answer?
Yeah.
As of this recording on January 4th, 2024, the answer is Gary Carter, 1975 Topps rookie card,
no PSA way. 10,
that sold for $56,000.
Are you serious? Gary
Carter. Number two is Tom Brady, I believe a gold auto sold 10? For $45,000.
Incredible. Yeah. That is crazy.
But with the super factors already, there's a bidding of 150, 105 or 150,000 right now. Insane. So
that's
that record will be broken. It. Yes.
Good for Gary Carter.
Wow. Was that number at the height of COVID?
It must be.
Yeah,
must
like, that's crazy.
It's
insane.
One of those rookie cards where there's three other players on it too.
Right? Oh, so, okay.
Yeah.
Right.
But still, holy cow.
Remember Gary Carter?
Oh, yeah. Gary Carter was a legend.
He's the best. Yeah. All right. I thought that was a that was a fun question. Okay, last one. Here we go. The number of $1 million plus sports card sales for the past five years. I'm going to give you these numbers, okay? 2019, there was one such card that sold for over $1 million. 2020, there was nine. 2021, our favorite year, there was 40. 2022, there was 39. This past year, this is a two-part question. How many do you think sold for over $1 million this past year? That's part A. And, well, first answer that question, and then I'll give you part B.
I'm going to say 25.
Okay.
Well, what was the last number? 39? 2021? Yes. That's a pretty good guess. I will go. Were there a lot of $1 million sales? I'm gonna go nine.
Nine.
Yeah.
Oh wow.
I feel like there weren't that many.
The correct answer is nine.
Whoa! Wow. John. What a guess!
It went, wow. 1, 9, 40, 39, and back to 9 for 2023.
It makes sense. It's just like a graph or like the hype. You've seen the hype, yes. And then you see it correct itself, and like any marketplace, right?
Yep. Okay, so part B of that question is, of the 9 sales, right, that sold for $1 million this past year in 2023, only one card was produced after 1952. So 8 of those cards are vintage, wow. Right? Mm. What was that one card that sold for over $1 million last year that was made post-1952?
Shohei Ohtani?
I don't think so.
Good guess, but no.
Hopefully it wasn't a Wander Franco.
$1 million.
This card, another clue, this card previously sold for over $3 million, and then it just sold this past year for just over $1 million. Yeah.
Luka?
So, no.
No.
But you're on the right. It's a GOAT player. Definitely a GOAT player.
What resold? Wait, what sold for $3 million? It's got, like, Patrick Mahomes, RPA, Wayne Gretzky, PSA 10. I don't know, Jordan, Green, PMG.
Think GOAT player.
Yeah.
Good. Retired.
Tom Brady.
Really?
Tom Brady? Yeah. There you go.
What
Tom Brady's 2000 playoff contenders championship ticket. Autograph rookie card. 66 out of 100. Serial numbered. BGS 9. Sold for $1.2 million.
Wow. In June. That's crazy.
There you go. And the rest were, you know, about the Babe Ruth Baltimore News that sold for $7.2 million.
Yeah.
Mickey Mantle, 1952 Tufts PSA 8, $1.17.
Crazy.
T206 Honus Wagner sold for $1.96.
Hey, just bringing that 52 Tufts up, that guy, what's the PSA 9 valued at? The guy who bought it.
Oh, the celebrity PSA who got 9. It.
I believe he sold it, or he bought it for 4.9.
4.9? So PSA 8, that's a pretty good sale, right? I believe so.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so close to 1.2, yeah.
I think he's done well, but go on.
Yep. The 1933 Gaudi Babe Ruth, 1.065, PSA 8.5. There's the SEC 9, 1952 Tufts Mickey Mantle. That was a $4.5 million sale.
PSA 9 is going to... Go higher than that.
Yeah. Remember the Joe? We talked about this in a previous podcast. The Joe Doyle vintage card. We didn't really know who he was. 1.3 million.
Wow, that's so crazy.
And
did Joe Doyle purchase that?
Well, I don't know if he's still alive. It's a 1909 card.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Makes sense. Okay.
Then there's a Babe Ruth 1916 M101 1.77, and then. Rounding out the top nine, another 1952 Mickey Mantle PSA 8. Earlier in 2023, February 25th to be exact, was 1.095 million. Wow. There you go.
Crazy.
That was another edition of Quiz Show. And we'll definitely do more of these throughout the year. I know you guys want me to be on the hot seat one of these days. So perhaps one,
one day. You're next.
That'll be the ongoing thing.
Yeah,
one day Clark will be next, but we'll see when or if it actually happens. All right, let's end off our episode with our regular weekly segment we call Pick One, and this is where each of us will choose two cards or two sets, and we debate which one we would rather invest in. All right, so Hyung, do you want to start things off as you usually do?
Sure thing. So I have a buddy, card buddy, Kenny Tomic. He's a longtime listener of the podcast, and he was actually one of the first guys I've done deals with way back before, you know, the COVID era. So he's always listening in and talking about cards, but he had a good one that I wanted to bring up in this show. And he asked, what do you think of a Soto Bowman Chrome Base Auto, True Gem, so 9-5-10, versus a Soto HMT Refractor, so 2018, Topps Chrome Update, Refractor number to 250, non-auto, a BGS 9-5. So you got his 2016 Bowman Chrome Auto, Base Auto, True Gem Plus, versus a 2018 Topps Chrome Update, HMT 55 Refractor at a 250, a BGS 9.5. So the BGS 9.5 was a 10 centering, 9.5 corners, a 9 edge, or sorry, and a 9 edge, and a 9.5 surface. So would you pick the Bowman Chrome or the Topps Chrome Update Refractor?
It's a good one. Ooh. So the 250, that's not a color refractor or anything like that.
That's
right?
Just the refractor. So there's no, remember Topps Chrome Update was
the Topps Chrome Update.
Yeah, yes. It's numbered to 250. So it's a lot more rare, and Soto doesn't have anything but the pinks as an addition to the base cards.
Yeah.
Do you know the value of those two cards?
So a PSA 10 last sold for $2,600. And then I don't know what a BGS sold for the Topps Chrome Update. Mm-hmm. And then I believe the Bowman Chrome Auto sold for $1,600. So I would say they're very similar in price.
Right. Yep.
Maybe the Bowman Chrome might be a little more expensive, I would say. Maybe $300, $400 more.
Makes sense. Mm. Well, I actually, you guys know me, I made that choice. So my answer is going to be the HMT Refractor at a 250. But I got that card, I don't know, probably like a year and a half now.
Nice.
A lot has changed since, right? Like the whole, flagship image, idea is kind of like going down the drain, especially with the newer sets. But I'm certainly, for myself, from a bias perspective, I am hoping like Juan Soto's year and some of these 2017, 2018 rookies like Tatis, like that sort of flagship image idea is still going to uphold. And I like that it's the Major League uniform. I like that it's a refractor. I like that it's numbered. And it's also that flagship image. I'm still, you know, as much as a lot of people, the younger collectors aren't into that as much, I'm still into that. Like, I think that flagship image is important, especially on the Juan Soto card. He has a very limited amount of, we've talked about this to death, very limited amount of rookie cards. And collectors are going to ask when they come into Juan Soto, if they, you know, end up coming back, what is the main rookie card to go for? And it's going to be that image, or it's going to be the Bowman first, right? And I'm not into as much, like, the autograph is great. The fact that it's Bowman first is great, but it's non-refractor. So from like a PC personal collection wise, it's not as eye appealing. And some may be completely different on that. They're like, no, it's an on-card auto. I like that a lot better. And then the whole image of Soto looking like, you know, a little kid with a T-ball helmet, like just a giant helmet.
Here we go.
Yeah, so I just it's got to be the you know, the grown adult Soto in his in his National League, you know, his Major League uniform, like that. That's in terms of PC, from a PC perspective. Mm. Yeah, HMT for me.
Interesting.
Mm, okay, this is a good one, because, you know, with the hobby where it is in terms of the sports card market, you know, I'm very selective now, or more selective now, and you know, some of the top two criteria that I look for are on-card autos and serial numbered. So now you got one of each, right? From both, right? You got the on-card auto with the first Bowman. I'm like, damn. And then the serial number for the Topps Chrome update. So I'm like, you know, and like, I don't know. It's a personal bias, I guess. I'm ultimately going to go for the first Bowman Chrome on-card auto. Because, you know, like, even now, like, I try, if I can afford it, not to go for the base auto. You know, I'd rather have a serial numbered first Bowman Chrome auto, just so I get the you know, my two criterias checked off. But you know, like, I think if Juan Soto does really well, I think those refractor or numbered parallel first Bowman Chrome autos will just go up, and then, you know, like, the base auto will be more attainable for a lot more collectors, you know. But the base autos will also go up, I think. Whereas, you know, with the Topps Chrome update, I like it that serial numbered, especially to 250. But correct me if I'm wrong, there's an autograph version of that as well, right?
There's a sticker, like, auto version that's not numbered, right? Which is interesting.
Mm-hmm. Ooh, okay.
Yeah. But not numbered. But it is super
more
rare.
Valued.
It's, yes, it's right, as limited as the X-Fractor auto. There's the same amount, okay, of print run, I believe, as the X-Fractor auto, which is numbered to, I want to say,
125 or something like that? Yeah.
Yeah.
Right. Okay. So, I mean, with that said, I think just because there's the existence of a autographed version of that card, although it's not numbered, you know, I think if that didn't exist, I'm like, you know, I might go for the Topps Chrome update number non-auto. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Like, but there is one card I would rather have. And which, even with the sticker auto, I know this is nothing John would do with a sticker auto card, but I will go for it for sure over even the number non-auto, I think. So nice. I'm going to stick with the first Bowman Chrome on card auto.
Nice. For me, Soto cards are very rare in general. I love Soto's collectability. So this was a big card when I re-entered the hobby. You know, Soto was, I've seen the ups and downs of Soto's. But I think the on-card auto is a huge card that's going to age really well. Like, I know his 17-year-old picture isn't the greatest, but I kind of think that brings a lot of long-term value down the road, because they realize he was a 16, 17-year-old kid when they signed him, and this is his card, right? And there's no on-card autos right? In 2016, other than his Bowman first, right? So if you look at the history of a Trout versus a Trout update, maybe not the same comparison, but, you know, similar, blacks do sell well, parallels do sell well in, in the Trout update, but how well a Bowman Chrome 2009 Bowman Chrome Trout ages, you know, that becomes the iconic card. So I think long term, there is a lot more legs with the Bowman Chrome auto because of the rarity. But this is something to note. We all like numbered cards, and Kenny made it a point that there were a lot more Bowman Chrome autos out there versus like a numbered 250. Right. So if you're in it for like, let's just say a short term flip, that might change things up a bit because liquidity is where the important factor comes in, as opposed to more a rare card. Right. That's tougher to get a comp, tougher to get a sale, right? Whereas the Bowman Chrome auto selling every single day, especially on a hot market. Right. Mm-hmm. So the liquidity, I think, is far superior on a Bowman Chrome auto if you're looking at that lens in general.
Yeah.
Right.
Makes sense.
So, yeah, I'm going to go Bowman Chrome auto, but I am a fan of all the parallels of Juan Soto Topps Chrome updates for sure.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Good question. One. And I like that. I like that Trout comparison. That makes sense to me, too.
So I'm going to go. Yeah, I'm going to go cross-sport Homer 1v1. We're going Bobichet Bowman first, PSA 10, purple refractor auto, last sold for 600-ish USD, versus William Nylander, future watch, PSA 10, last sold for 450-ish USD. And I know it's Homer, and you know, but perhaps it's helpful for some, because they're still very popular players. And maybe they'll get people listening that aren't from Toronto get a little bit of insight from three Torontonians, how we feel about these hometown boys.
Perhaps. Or only the Canadian listeners are tuning in right now.
Yeah.
But I like it. I like it. This is hard because like even there's a Homer bias, but there's like a personal bias for me too. Like, you know, Nylander.
Yeah.
I'm in the market for Nylander. Yeah, because he gave my kid a fist bump. So I'm like, you know, a future watch auto for him would be great memory, and you know, and oh man. But then, you know, Nylander is having a ridiculous year, you know, so I'm like, shoot, I should have bought it last year when it was much more affordable. Now everything's kind of inflated. And then you look at Bo Bichette, which, like, one of my favorite Jays players, and I'm always in the market for Bo Bichette because I feel like he's underrated. So I'm going to go for Bo Bichette primarily because I feel like the deal is with Bo Bichette right now. Like, his market's been like, it's just been going down and down. You know what I mean? Like, it's so affordable that to the point where, you know, initially I was looking for, I had a refractor numbered to 499, which I traded. If you guys remember last year with my Lewis Robert, and I got the Aaron Judge Bowman Chrome refractor. Right. But I'm like, I've always wanted a Bo Bichette back. And so I've been looking for a numbered one, and the market's gone down so much that I'm looking at blues.
Right. You know
what I mean? Numbered to 150. Right. So amazing. I think the deal is still there for a nice Bo Bichette card, like colored refractor parallel. So, you know, but I can't remember. Your Bo Bichette was just a base auto, or
it was a purple, a purple numbered at a 250.
Oh, purple. Sorry, numbered to 250. So there you go. I'm going for Bo Bichette, numbered to 250, auto.
Nice. I think I'm gonna go Bo Bichette too. I just think. Well, I think Bo Bichette. The dangers of Bo Bichette is he gets no love. He could continue to do what he's doing, and
that's
he's.
True. Yeah.
He's such a good player. He's such a good hitter. And it's eerily similar. Like I mentioned this even a couple of years ago, and you extrapolate the data now. He's eerily similar to Mookie Betts in the numbers he's producing. Obviously, Mookie did special things as he aged as well. So Bo is on the same trajectory, in my opinion, as a type of Mookie Betts type player. So I think I think he's going to have to continually prove himself, and people are going to start to slowly realize that this guy is super, super talented. He's going to be a potential Hall of Fame type player. I think his market might sit sideways for a bit still. Right. So that's the dangers of it. If it's something that you need a quick flip, I think you're going to probably get it on the William Nylander like type future watch auto, because I could see a surge of demand. I don't know what does a future watch 10, is it PSA 10?
PSA 10 goes for like $450-ish, a little bit cheaper than the
purple. Yeah, so I think there's potential with that on a shorter term. But yeah, for me, I can't justify it. Like, I believe in Bo Bichette as a player. So it would be on that basis, right? Where it's like, I don't expect to make a short-term flip, but I think long-term, if I hold this, lock in the safe, enjoy baseball, enjoy Bo Bichette, I think I would do well with it.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Interesting. I think this is an obvious and oddball question that it's cross sports. So clearly, if you like baseball, it's going to be a pretty easy question. If you like hockey, probably be a pretty easy question. But cross sport wise, you guys make good points about Bo Bichette, which I agree with. But that last point Hyung mentioned about how he feels the Bo Bichette may sit sideways for a bit, that's what concerns me as a Blue Jay fan. Like, I don't know if it's going to sit sideways, and then he's not even a Blue Jay anymore, you know? So from a fan personal perspective, you know, we don't know where he may get traded. Like, is he going to be here long-term? There's a lot of question marks of how much fans are going to continue to grow to like this guy. So on the flip side, there's lots of rumors that Willie is closing in on a deal. I think the numbers that people are mentioning is like, he's close to signing like an eight-year, 11 mil per season, like a Mitch Marner deal. He's going to be locked up, you know? I think for Leaf fans, you know, I don't speak for all of Leaf fans, but I know for myself, we like William Nylander. You know, this guy's like a zone entry monster. He give him the puck and he enters the zone every time. He works hard. He wins puck battles. Mm-hmm. You know, I think it also helps that his salary was only $6 million. So the expectation was a little bit lower, but like somebody like Mitch Marner, his future watch goes for like $1,000. He's a polarizing character, personality. Like, not that his actual personality is polarizing, but the fact that he makes so much money and he's not delivering results, I think there's a lot more pressure on Mitch Marner and Austin Matthews and John Tavares. And William Nylander, I think, is, he's looked at it in a positive light. So I think all of that factoring in, the fact that we live in Toronto, you know, a little bit of bias because of liquidity and trading at the Expo, all of that stuff, I think long-term for us, it's William Nylander.
Cool. I like that one, actually. I just saw one, a raw Future Watch auto while you're talking. It was just listed by Slapshark, so maybe I'll grab one. When the auction ends in a week,
we'll see. I think before the season started, the Future Watch was probably like $200. Like, I know. It was pretty low.
I know. So disappointed that I didn't pick one up then. All right, let's move on. Okay, this is a little bit of a twist. All right, here we go. It's going to be pick one out of these three cards. Okay, one of them's a high upside guy, in my opinion. Another one is a certain Hall of Famer, but a catcher. Another one is another future Hall of Famer, but a pitcher. Okay, and they all go for about $600 to $650. Okay, all graded BGS 9.5, so the grading is similar. All auto, so and the auto grade is all 10, so everything's similar on that front. The first card, 2018 Bowman Chrome Luis Robert, true blue, number to 150. Okay. 615, last sold 615 today, actually, earlier today. Wow, second one. Yeah, 615 for true blue auto. Number two, 2005 Bowman Chrome, Justin Verlander, rookie auto, BGS 9.5/10, 650. So again, same price range. And the last one sold for 625. His name is Buster Posey, 2008 Bowman Chrome rookie auto. So all rookie autos, all on card, of course, because it's Bowman Chrome. Who are you picking? Lewis Robert Blue or the Justin Verlander rookie auto?
It's a Bowman Chrome. Buster Posey rookie Justin auto. Verlander, what year? 2005. I'm going, let me just quickly see this card first. 2005. Okay, yeah, if you could
as well.
Pop it up. Let me just. Okay, yeah. I'm going Justin Verlander 100%. Yeah.
100%. Really? Wow.
I actually have been looking for this card. Yeah, like I just think coming. Those Bowman Chrome early 2005s, the print run was super low. So it's like it's so tough to get a hold of those cards, and I think his value, he's done enough as one of the modern greatest pitchers to, along with Clayton Kershaw. So for me, like, those guys are a target in general, and catchers, they get no love. Like, even Hall of Fame catchers, you know, they get no love other than vintage. But I just feel like pitchers that dominate, such as Nolan Ryan, Randy Johnson's, you know, the Justin Verlanders, even Clayton Kershaw, you know, so much potential, especially with the early Bowman, early 2005s Bowman Chrome. So yeah, I'm a huge fan of the Verlander card, and it's an easy one for me.
Wow. Okay. A little surprised.
Wow. Yeah. I'm not surprised at that too much, because I think I feel like the easy answer is Verlander, because if you look at the three, you know, who's the actual legend of the three? It's very clear. It's Verlander.
Yeah.
Buster Posey, I think he's a legend in certain towns, and I think he's always been a very likable, baseball player. So a lot of people like him. But yeah, he's a catcher. There's a lot of limited growth upside there in terms of investment. So for me, it kind of comes down to, man, Luis Robert he's the thorn by our side. He's always going to get us. I knew you're going to throw Luis Robert in there. It comes down to Robert, Verlander, and then your appetite for risk and what you're really doing with these cards. And for me, Verlander, Buster Posey, the smart answer certainly is Verlander. But I don't PC those guys. I was never, you know, super fans of those guys. Luis Robert, I could say I'm a fan, because he's been our main chase since we kind of got back into the hobby, right? Like, that's Luis Robert, Bobichet. Those are some of the bigger characters in terms of baseball chases during the height of COVID. So there is a bit of sentimental there. And man, Luis Robert just had a pretty monster year. Like, he's won a gold glove already. He won a silver slugger. Barring injury, which it's seemingly this guy can't stay healthy, but if he can stay healthy this season, you know, a string of 2-3 years of like full season, I think people can turn around on what they think about Luis Robert. And man, a blue refractor for $600, that card used to be a lot of money. So I think, because I'm, you know, from a personal perspective, I enjoy rooting on Luis Robert. Maybe it's to kind of salvage some of my lost funds. But yeah, I'm willing for, you know, $600 might be a lot of money for some. I think that's it, for the three of us, it's sort of like that middle ground play money. Mm-hmm. And I think I'd be willing to throw money at Luis Robert at this point. It's so low. And if he comes out swinging and leading the league in home runs, I could see that card going to $800-$900 or something like that. So yeah, it could be a good short-term opportunity. So that's where I'm at.
Yes, I got Johnny with Luis Robert. That's my only goal for this trick one.
Yeah.
Oh, man. You know what? I'll keep this short. I'm a sucker for pain. Luis Robert all the way. Blue. I'm going... So let's go. Double down. Let's do it.
I think at this point, it's like quadruple down. Yeah. Quintuple down.
Oh man. So, but you know what? Like, he had a pretty good season last year. I think it was he just played for such a crappy team that it was overshadowing. But
it was after,
you know? 38 homers.
He pulled that shenanigans, remember? Early on the season, he showboated. He let up.
Oh, where he let up on a
ass chewed out, and then he turned it up.
He got benched.
But I think that's the problem, is like, it's like, if you see that the potential's there, but it's like, you'd want a positive like vibe coming from. So he has to, I think, step up his game in that aspect where he's earning the fans kind of like respect. Right. Mm-hmm. That's what I'll say about Luis Robert. I love him as his talent and player.
Spoken like a,
yeah,
like speaking like a true coach, but you know what? Like that incident, that just shows me that he learned his lesson and he's rehabilitated. So I'm all in. I'm back all in. You know, all Luis Robert needs to do is get traded to just a contending team, because you know, I don't think the White Sox are going to be that team this coming year. But could be another huge mistake. Very well go down to $200-$300 by the end of 2024, especially if he gets injured again. But yeah, it's too tempting with the blue number to 150, and knowing that I sold this PSA 10 base auto for $1,000.
Great.
Now the blue BGS 95 is $600. Yeah.
That's wild.
The deal is there. All right. Well, thanks again to all our listeners, of course, tuning into our podcast. We appreciate you guys. And if you haven't given us a rating and you enjoyed this episode, we would definitely appreciate that as well. And we'll see you with a brand new podcast on Friday. Talk then. Bye.
Hey, thanks for listening to Cards to the Moon. We'd really appreciate you subscribing to our podcast wherever you listen to your podcasts. And you can also connect with each of us on Instagram at 5cardguys, or you can follow Hyung at Integrity Sports Cards, or John at TradeU at Recess. You can also check us out at 5cardguys.com. Thanks again, and hope to connect soon.